Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I am joined by Tom and Melissa Gould, and also our newest host who's been with us for past few shows, Marta Kristen Kane. So, hello, everyone.
Hello.
Well, as you know, if you're a regular listener to the show, this is the show where we shoot the breeze. You send us questions. You call in with your questions. We discuss them. You're welcome to call in. The number here is 888-627-6008. And before we get started, I just want to mention that presently our October grief retreat is still open for reservations. That's the one for bereaved parents. And on Monday, we're opening up registration for our Florida General Grief Retreat. That's in January. So all the information is on our website. So before we get going, some people had sent in, you know, their questions. I wanted to discuss something with you. I wrote an article recently, and sometimes I get into trouble because I write an article and I just write it as I go along, and I hope it makes sense at the end. I'm trying to work it out as I'm writing it. So it started with my conversations with my father, and he, you know, he's 98, and his short-term memory is terrible. You know, he'll just keep repeating the same thing over and over again. But on my last visit, I had a conversation with him where he was recounting stuff that happened, literally 70 years ago. Including things in the war and stuff I didn't know or I never knew or I didn't remember. And you know, it's always puzzling to me. I know there's explanations for it, why somebody's short-term memory would go, but their long-term memory is pretty much intact. So I started reading as much as I could. And one researcher had the explanation that long-term memories due to firings in our brain, hardwiring, so to speak. Long-term memories, especially memories that were important to us, stay with us longer, whereas short-term memories are somewhat temporary. And made sense to me because I remember going to school. I used to get good grades because I'd stay up the night before and I'd cram. I was able to, in those days, to memorize all the stuff. So I would just spit it back, you know, and get an A, which doesn't say much about our quality of education. Because if you came back to me 2 weeks later and you asked me stuff that I, on the test, I'd probably fail miserably because it was already gone. So that's, both of those explanations have to do with the brain. And yet we study mediumship and other things. And what do we know? Mediums communicate information from discarnates, people that don't have brains anymore and don't have bodies. And the people in spirit are reporting or communicating evidence in the form of memories, things that they remember. So how do you equate the two? You know, near-death experiencers have these clear and lucid experiences where they remember, you know, everything, and yet their brains are inactive. So I'm puzzled by it, you know, because it's either your brain is responsible for memory, and our evidence seems to show that memories are stored elsewhere. I sense that it has something to do with the connectivity of consciousness, but you guys have any ideas on this?
Wow!
Wow, boy! I thought you were about to tell us what you've deduced from all of this.
If I deduced anything, I wouldn't be having this conversation. I think it's a combination of the two. I think that there are some memories that are stored in the brain, and when the brain ceases to function, something else takes over, and that's our pure consciousness or mind, and we're able to just, you know, pick out all the memories in a different storehouse than the brain. Does that make any sense?
And well, what jumps to mind is in a past life regression, you don't only hold on to those memories, but you can go back to memories of a previous life. So I definitely think that points to consciousness having a storehouse as well.
Right.
Yeah. You've got me thinking about this, Bob. Maybe by the next show, I'll have something brilliant to share.
Oh, yeah, you're right at all.
Well, what's better for you guys, your short-term memory or your long-term memory? Marta, how about you?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I remember songs. You know, I'm sort of a song savant because I just remember all the lyrics that I've heard throughout my life. And I think you're right. I think it's a storage room that somehow it reignites through listening to something. I know that there are people with dementia that if they hear familiar music from their teenage years or the years that were most important to them, all of a sudden they light up. They become very animated, and they actually start connecting with you. And so there's something that's going on that we don't quite understand. And I sort of see it as you know, being in another room somehow, that it's a part of our brain that just, as I said, ignites for some reason. I don't know whether, you know, it has anything to do with, you know, consciousness from another realm or not, you know, I just don't know. But I do know that part of me loves thinking about what I, you know, had as a child with my parents, good memories. But I prefer to stay in this moment, and hopefully we'll, you know, the brain cells will continue to move in that direction for now, anyway.
You know, Marta, when you mentioned that about the music and for elderly people, I know visiting when my mother had a brief stay in a nursing home rehab center and visiting with her and also other people that I would see from time to time in those kinds of settings, that they would often have in their social program somebody coming in to sing all the old favorite songs, and people who had barely moved or uttered a word were now tapping their foot, singing along, humming, and all livened up out of, you know, just this listening to the music. A friend of mine had shared, and I don't think we've found if this is proven to be true or not, but she felt that if somebody is close to death, lingering, and is suffering, and their loved ones are like, oh my goodness, you know, nobody wants their loved ones to die, but often you want them to be at peace and out of pain and suffering. Her suggestion was not to play the old familiar music, but to play something unusual and different, because the old familiar wonderful songs that held so many memories were holding this person back. They didn't want to leave this world because of all the memories and the wonderful times. But this unusual music would be so enticing that it might just invite them to...
Yeah. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. And I know when we did shamanic breath work with one of our friends, that music that she played to take us to another realm was so unique and interesting. So maybe it would be something like that.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to some of the questions that were sent in. I'm a young widow, 43, and lost my husband a year ago to service-connected cancer. He was 42 years old. I talk to him like he's still here. Is it necessary to communicate out loud to my husband? For instance, when I ask him to send me a sign or something similar, can it be through thought and not an audible request? I guess I'm asking, can they hear us on the other side through our thoughts, or do we have to speak out loud to them? I think we're all going to have a similar answer to that, you know, and that where they are, everything is thought. It's a world of thought. And they understand each other, you know, perfectly. And we know from our work that, you know, a thought is just the same as a verbal request. So I think that you could feel safe by talking to them with your mind as opposed to thought. Anybody disagree with that?
I definitely agree. Other than you probably might feel more empowered or comfortable speaking out loud if you're in a room at home and you just start talking. It might feel better that way, but perhaps on the flip side of things, if you're on the train or out in public, you're not going to start talking out loud. So you can use your thoughts in those situations.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point because, you know, it's just in the same vein as people thinking that an in-person medium reading will be stronger than one, you know, on the internet. Somehow we feel that our connection to spirit is going to be, you know, stronger if we say it out loud, you know, that they'll hear us better. It's a natural way of thinking, but, you know, it's really not the case.
I know that I would prefer, I talk to my parents out loud and Kevin all the time and my sister, and it just makes me feel better. But I know that yeah, I can think about them and it's the same thing. But it just, yeah, I just sort of like to hear my own voice, I guess. And the question, I want the question to be as clear as possible.
That is true. I mean, I do think that if you take the time to verbalize, then, as you say, your thought will be more channeled, whereas it might get scattered if you're just randomly thinking. I know when I try to meditate, all these thoughts go this way and that way all the time. So yes, verbalizing can keep you focused.
Okay. Let's see what we have here. Grief is nothing new to me. I lost my mom as a child. My dad died a few years back. I thought losing my mom was the worst thing that happened in my life for all these decades until my nephew, who passed last year. He is my sister's firstborn baby. I was part of his caretaking in the first few years of his life as I lived with my sister. That bond ended up being so strong between both of us. Even though he was my nephew, he was my firstborn child, my sibling, my best friend, and my partner in crime. On top of all these, I prayed every single day while my sister was pregnant that he would be a reincarnation of my mom. He was 33 when he passed to the other side last year, and lately I've been seeing the number 33 in so many different forms and combinations that there's something he's trying to tell me, but I'm not able to decipher the messages. But I do strongly believe that he's around me, but I'm not able to see what he's trying to tell me. I have tried to meditate and self-channel to get messages from him, but I'm unable to figure it out. Do you have any guidance as to how I connect with him? And she goes on to say she appreciates him, the regular listener to the show.
Doesn't it sound as though that is the communication? The 33, I'm with you, I'm around you, and that's enough.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, sometimes the signs, they don't hit you over the head, but it's just a subtle hello, right?
Yeah.
So, and as we often say, you can't force it to happen. You know, as far as the real question is, you know, I think she's putting too much pressure on herself to make it happen. So I know that we talk about, and Melissa, you do a good job with it, what people can do, but meditation and
when she just can acknowledge that. I know I have an appointment with someone the other day for tomorrow, which is 8/8. Immediately this person said, oh, 8/8, that's my lucky number. And when it turned out I could have met with her today, now she wanted to keep it. Is it tomorrow's the 8/8,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, then I misspoke, because we did meet, was it this morning?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
We were just talking about short-term memory. Yeah, you didn't. Thanks for that, Melissa. Tom, how about you? You remember what you had for breakfast this morning?
Well, I was gonna say with the short-term memory, I often can't remember what the beginning of the sentence was that I'm talking about in the moment. I'll get halfway through the sentence and then I'll stop and go, what the heck was I even talking about?
Yeah, I think that happens to us all.
The thing about Tom's breakfast, he eats the same thing every day. So we could
Even I know what he had for breakfast this morning.
But Bob, I want to tell her, your guest, that Kevin and I, my late husband and I, had both talked about a sign that we would see if one of us passed before the other. And 33 was the number.
Oh, wow.
And I can't tell you how many times I've seen 30. I wake up to 633. I wake up to, 33 is, on some postage piece that I've received as it's on a, license plate all the time. And it can't all be coincidence. And, I say, what I say is thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
I acknowledge you, and I thank you for remembering me and giving me that sign. So, yes, 33 is a good number.
Yes.
Well, there you go. Marta agrees with that 33. Maybe she wrote that for a reason, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
You hear the story. So it was a hello for Marta as well.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
Yes.
Goes through third party sometimes. Ever since a friend told me how she would find random dimes after her father's passing, and I started finding a single dime anytime I was struggling with a decision or discouraged. I shared this with my father a month or two before he passed, and since he passed 6 months ago, I find a single dime in random spots, especially when I'm thinking about my dad. Is this common? Hell yeah. it's common. We hear this all the time, and sometimes, it means nothing. And other times it's really a sign, especially as you say, when you're thinking about your dad and then you found it. And when you find the dimes, you probably are convinced that it is your dad, right?
Yes.
And what we tell folks at our grief retreats is that the sign could be while you're thinking of your loved one and then you spot the dime, or you weren't even thinking about your loved one. You're going about your business and all of a sudden you spot a dime and then you go, oh, dimes, that's from my father. You know, and it makes you have all these warm and fuzzy feelings, and that might just be what you needed at that time.
Okay, let's see. We have, I have been visited by my departed loved ones many times now. I always know without a doubt who's visiting. I can feel them and an overwhelming feeling of love and warmth. I'm always begging them to stay, and I'm reaching for them as they eventually slip away. They never speak, but I'm left feeling so peaceful. There is no doubt in my mind that these visitations are real and not just dreams. On one occasion, all of them came to me in this beautiful array of light, one after another. They were all there, and I knew who they were just by their presence. However, there were some I didn't know, but I got the feeling they were ancestors. I'm not sure, though. My question is, why don't they speak to me? How can I engage them? Is there a message? What does it mean for my future? I don't consider myself a psychic or a medium, but I am a sensitive person and would love to develop this gift. Well, you know, I mean, I agree. You're a sensitive person. It's interesting that they all came to you at once. That's unusual. And in a large percentage of these visitations, there are no words spoken. Just their very presence is all that's needed, you know. You know, maybe that is the message, you know, and maybe the conditions aren't right for verbal conversation, but the appearance is all that's needed.
Go ahead, Tom.
And again, spirit, as you mentioned earlier, it's all by thought. Their communication on the other side is all by thought. So to verbalize for spirit, that's a more difficult step than, you know, just sending a sign or an electrical impulse or something like that, which they is the coin of their realm that they can do more easily. It would be nice to be able to carry on a conversation. And I guess if you were mediumistic, you do get the actual verbalizations to a point. But many of our mediums who communicate with spirit all the time aren't necessarily doing it, the spirit's not doing it verbally, but more like sending symbols and pictures and that sort of thing. And again, there are the mediums who actually say, well, they're telling me this, or I'm hearing this. So it is possible, but for our human brains to be able to understand and interpret what is being said, it takes more practice than for most people.
I was going to say the same thing about the language not being verbally expressed, but I think each of us has probably had the experience at some point with some of the mediums who've either attended our workshops or we went to theirs, where they work on the skill for people mostly who would like to develop their abilities. And with their guidance, they can draw out of us more information about, well, what did that, you know, what are you thinking right now? Or what color does that bring to mind? Or what situation? And they have a certain ability to form more thoughts in our minds. So without the verbal communication, you still can create or understand what might be conveyed to you.
Yeah, you know, I was having a conversation with Lloyd the other day about apparitions, and he suggested something different than things that I've been saying. I always thought that, for instance, somebody in spirit to appear in physical form, like a manifestation, took a lot of energy. But he suggested that it has more to do with us. They're always around, but we may not have the ability to perceive them.
Right.
You know, and maybe it's the same thing with the talk. Maybe they are sending thoughts to us or so-called talking to us, but we don't have the proper resonance or mechanism to hear them. You know, so I mean, that makes sense to me as well.
It certainly does. And then again, going back to seeing a medium at work, they'll often say, oh, I see a gentleman standing right behind you. So, yeah, there are ways to actually see these spirits, but it does take a lot of practice and training to be able to.
Yeah.
I remember when my daughter, Lena was very close to my mother. And in fact, when she would sit, I would put her next to her when she was only 2 years old. She, if I picked her up to take her home, she would cry. So when my mother passed, Lena told me that she would hear her voice talking to her. Wow. Now, I think that late, and she was older, you know, at that, by that point, maybe she was 8 or 9. And she would say, oh, I heard, you know, grandma today. And she was talking, she said, Lena, how are you? And, you know, and at first she was shocked and a little scared. And I said, no, it's just mom talking to you, telling you, you know, she loves you. But she lost that as she got older. So maybe, you know, it's that openness of, like a child has, that allows that to come in more readily.
I love that. And I believe that up to a certain age, the children, I think it's that world building, it's their worlds get bigger, the closeness to say to her grandmother, or even just to us, as their worlds get bigger, it shifts the attention. To things just shifts. I know years ago when I was working in a preschool, I had a camp group with 3-year-olds, and one mother who happened to be a doctor, I don't know if that makes any difference, but she was quite concerned that her daughter was holding on to this necklace and insisting that her grandmother gave it to her. And the grandmother had died before the little girl was born. And the mother also doesn't know where this necklace came from.
Oh.
But I'm recalling now, as I'm telling this story, many years later, I was down in our local library. I don't know if I'm telling tales out of school, but our certified medium, Laura Lynn Jackson, her husband was involved in ghost hunting for a while. And I believe he was part of a workshop that was delivering information down in our public library, down in our village. And that mom and her daughter were there. So I didn't ask, I don't know even if I recalled the story from when she was 3, but perhaps that's why they were there, because maybe the daughter's interest continued as she became a teenager. So, Bob, that was a long-term memory I just had.
Yeah, you're good at that. We just have to work on the short-term stuff. Don't worry, we'll get there. Okay. Well, let's see. My home phone rang only once. When I picked up, saw the word dad on the window of the phone where you were only supposed to read a phone number of the person calling. Haven't seen my father in years. Communicate with him or anything. My parents got divorced when I was 5 years old, and he has not been in my life at all. Was this a sign that he died? Was he trying to contact me?
Ooh, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, we I don't think we can really answer that, but those are two possibilities.
I would say, mine was a different mission.
Yeah.
I shared this story with you. It wasn't last year, but the year before Christmas, early Christmas morning, it was the 26th, so it was the day after, and I was using the bathroom down the hall, and outside the door I heard, hello, and I said, I'm in here, I'll be right out, and stepping out into the hallway, expected to run into Tom, there was no one there. At all. And I even though it was like 3 or 4 a.m., I searched the house because I was that sure that I'd heard the voice. And I know a lot of people hear voices. But for me, this was unique, and it immediately made me think, who's trying to contact me? And the person I could only think of was my brother, who has removed himself from the family and doesn't want communication from us. So I was convinced that something had happened to my brother. It would have been the same quality to his voice. I won't go into all the details of what I did that preceding week, but for this individual who wants to know about her dad, I paid $30 and went on to truthfinder.com.
Yeah, I know. You know, it could have been a case that your brother simply had to use the bathroom. You know, sometimes the obvious explanation is the best. Yeah. All right. We have, okay, in 2013, my father passed away the night before his wake. I couldn't sleep. I woke up and I was sitting on the side of my bed. And just as I was ready to stand up, I looked down on my lap and I saw lots of glowing bright lights hovering around my lap. I looked all around in my bedroom to see if something in my room was illuminating my lap, but there wasn't anything. When I realized this was strange, I kind of panicked and left my room as the bright lights dissipated. What could this be?
Yeah. I have nothing.
There was silence hit the airwaves.
No, I absolutely believe that it was something trying to communicate, whether it's her father, because I've had dreams of this amazing light that is the most peaceful, beautiful, ineffable light. And I remember when my father died and I was hiking with my dogs and it was dusk and all of a sudden this light just surrounded me. Now, I didn't imagine it. It was there. But so I think that those things happen. Also, the room where he used to stay, my mother and he used to stay when they were visiting. I was sitting there with my daughter and all of a sudden the room lit up. And we both went, oh, yeah, hi, Dad, you know, because he was so strong. He had such a deep faith and strong strength in life. And if anyone would come back in light, it would be my father. So I believe that. I believe it was her father.
Yeah, and I also in that story, when the woman saw the light, she got scared. And that's a line that spirit tries not to go over. There's so many stories. Bob tells a great one about somebody who wanted to see somebody and then saw them and screamed. And so spirit does not want to jar you. They want to comfort you. As you say, you get that warm feeling. So it's a difficult, first of all, it's difficult for spirit to be able to manifest in some way on the physical plane, and then to be able to manifest without causing panic is a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
The fear factor, unfortunately, is pervasive in our society when it comes to things that we can't perceive with our known senses.
You know, before you go on, Bob, saying that and the fear, those of us here who believe, do we feel that we would react that way? I don't, you know, if you have a belief in the afterlife, would the fear be there?
Not for me. I suspect not for either one of you.
No.
When I shared my experience with the hello, I wasn't scared. Yeah. I was curious.
Yeah, I know Marta would not be fearful.
No, I wouldn't. No.
Yeah, for sure. Of course, you never know until you're in that situation, but I think it's a pretty safe bet. You know?
Yeah.
It's also a safe bet. I don't think any of us are afraid to die. I mean, not that we want to do it, but, you know. What is your opinion? Does the same treatment happen to everyone after death, irrespective of their religion and beliefs? I guess that means by the same treatment is, does your religion and beliefs affect your welcoming or belonging in the next world?
I don't think so. I've read so many different accounts of what takes place when you go to the other side. You're greeted by somebody you know, or by spirit guides, and then you personally do a life review where you go over your mistakes and that sort of thing, and then decide whether you need to come back and learn more or not. And I think that's pretty much across the board. The only thing that I will say is, having heard NDE discussions, is if you are, say, a Catholic, there's a chance you will be greeted by Jesus. And so I imagine if you were a different religion, you might be see a deity from that religion. Whether I believe it's the actual person or spirit just coming to you in a form that would be comforting to you is where I'd lean on that.
I would agree completely with that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you know, there are so many people that still equate the afterlife with religion. That's the way that they were brought up, you know, do this and do this, you'll go here, do this, you're going to go there. But we believe that it's another dimension. It has nothing to do with your religious beliefs. I mean, atheists go to the same place, you know. Now, what happens over there, we don't know. And you know, and as Tom was saying, it's very likely that we see some sort of a divine spark or a light, you know, but then if we're resuscitated, in like an NDE, we come back, we have to put that feeling, that ineffable thing that happened, into words. And that's where we can only use our own frames of reference, you know, religion and so forth and beliefs. So that's why, as Tom mentioned, people across the globe describe essentially the same thing differently, but they're still just seeing that, you know, that divine light. Let's see, we've got... Can mediums see the future?
The future, you know, don't we say all mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are mediums. So if you say, can mediums see the future? Apparently. Whether it's accurate and whether they should share it, I don't know.
Yeah, there was a Real Housewives episode where there was one of the Real Housewives had a friend who was a medium and had her over for dinner and who got pretty tipsy. And she said, "Oh, I love it. I can tell when everybody's going to die, you know?" And so can they? I don't know. That's on one hand. On the other hand, I've had readings or seen readings with a medium who is probably one of the best out there, who made some comment about, "Oh, in 2 years, this will happen." And I've seen the 2 years come and go and it not happening. So, and then there's the free will and things like that. So I would say they can see a possible future, but the future's unwritten.
Yeah, I agree with that. And let me just say that I'm just shocked that Tom is watching The Real Housewives. I just can't get over that. But moving on.
You don't, Bob?
Well, I'll never tell.
Marcella Buck said it's the same as ESPN.
That's right.
Yes. But Bob, I want to say, I don't want to know. I don't want to know, you know, when and where, and because you're focused on that rather than being focused on now. And it would be a detriment, I think, for me in my life to have that knowledge. And I mean, you can get things about your genetic, makeup and all that, and you know, what you might be prone to, which, you know, might help you, you know, in how you take care of yourself. But I certainly don't want to know about, you know, maybe the lotto or something. The lottery might be good, but other than that, no.
I agree. That would imagine how we would live our lives.
No.
Well, we would caution anybody to make life decisions based upon information that a psychic gave you, because, you know, as Tom suggested, there are many different futures, but there are forks in the road, maybe 100 forks, and maybe the medium or the psychic is seeing one of those paths, but we know that free will exists on both sides of the veil, and things change. That future that the psychic envisions very likely, you know, will not happen. So, and I know that people do it all the time. That's why these psychic hotlines exist. Most of them are phony, but, you know, and then people constantly, even with our own mediums, you know, they'll request, you would think everybody would want a medium reading to talk with a departed loved one. No, a lot of them just want to know about their life path and advice, not so much whether they're going to live or die, that kind of stuff, but path, you know, career path, love path, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
just getting guidance. Do you remember, Bob, at one of our events years and years ago, I think it was one of our own mediums who told us that she was going somewhere and she had a strong impression, don't drive somewhere, something was going to happen to the car. And she went anyway, and the car had a flat tire, and it caused her to be late, or the people in the car. And that's the only snippet I recall, but she didn't listen to her own guidance.
Yeah. We know that people have precognitive dreams and precognitive visions and feelings, and very often those come true, you know. So is that seeing the future or just perceiving, you know, what's going to happen, you know, something that happened, you know, in the future and they're seeing in real time now? I don't know, but my advice to anybody is don't rely on psychic information. And also, I've found some mediums that are incredibly gifted at mediumship, but not so much in reading energy from another living person or future stuff. But we did a research project a year or two ago involving mediums, and one of the questions was involving predictions. And, you know, a couple of them, you know, came true, but the majority of them, you know, did not, you know, for, you know, in that time frame. So, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I've had a couple of precognitive events in my life, and a dream, I guess both of them were a dream, and then I woke up the next day thinking about it, and then a day or two later, it came true. And the way I felt about it was that kind of if you're lying, floating on your back in the water, and a boat is coming towards you, that would be the big event, is coming towards you, that there's a wake ahead of it. The energy of the boat is pushing the water in front of it, and you lying there floating feel the wake and know that that's what's happening before the boat actually hits you. And I don't know if that clears up anything, but that's the way I feel about precognitive events.
I think also along those lines, like, what does that mean? I have a feeling we talk about these different beliefs and we revisit these different beliefs of how things play out, but I'll bet there's so much more, as Seth would say, that he could tell us all about it, but our feeble little brains wouldn't understand. So I think we're just on the cusp of understanding.
Okay. You didn't glance over at Tom when you said that feeble little brain, did you? I thought I noticed a little. Nah, I must be imagining that. Now you're all self-conscious. I'm just kidding. It was not an inadvertent glance. We all know Tom is an intellectual
giant.
Yeah. Giant and sane thinker. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Has anyone ever heard of an NDE type situation of someone tending to a loved one passing over? Can it happen to someone fully conscious? I witnessed a fog emit from his body at the moment of passing, and almost immediately my life transformed. I felt incredible love, gratitude, abundance. I stepped outside and the colors of flowers were vivid and my hearing was acute. claircognizance, among other things. My thought process and everything changed. Yes, I grieve his physical presence, but these experiences have changed the grieving process for me. I had a sort of NDE myself, where I was taken to the edge of this world and the next world and the next, and bestowed with gifts and understandings. And yeah, you know, matter of fact, Raymond Moody wrote a book of just that, about that thing called shared death experiences, where loved ones, witnesses to somebody that's dying, share. They see what the dying person is seeing. This wasn't talking about deathbed visions. You know, this was talking about somebody having a near-death experience. So that I haven't heard of, you know, because, you know, usually you're not around when somebody is in that situation. You know, I mean, if it's in the hospital, you're not going to be allowed in the operating room. And if it's an accident someplace, there's going to be so much going on, and you know that I don't think you're going to be able to focus like that. But I don't see why, if it's possible with a deathbed vision, why shouldn't it be possible with an NDE? Yeah, it's a good question.
And I think a person is just a little off on the nomenclature that they're having what they calling an NDE because they are experiencing something spiritual, rather than, but they're not, they're conscious and awake. I think is instead of calling it an NDE, I think what they're having is an out-of-body experience. And there are plenty of examples of people who can be wide awake and have an out-of-body experience, remote viewing and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it is possible. I just wouldn't call it an NDE.
Yeah, I agree. There is no question that there is an enormous amount of unjust suffering in this world. Good people die and the evildoers go on living. Coping with the loss of a loved one is difficult enough, but seeing the evildoer escape and real accountability or punishment is at times, escape real accountability or punishment is at times unbearable. Do you have any knowledge of mediumship confirmation that there is moral justice or some kind of accountability upon the evildoers in the afterlife? And, you know, not so much from the mediums, but from near-death experiencers and other channeled writings, as Tom touched on this before, is that we have self-judgment, you know, and if you're a person that was an evildoer, you're going to wind up with other evildoers, and you're going to be in that environment, at least initially. So, you know, in that, Tom mentioned the life review, and it must be pretty hurtful to see your life flash before you and actually feel the harm and the hurt that you caused upon others. That must be a terrible feeling. So, and that's probably what the evildoers, that's probably what they feel when they're among other people. So there's an incentive to do good, not evil, right?
Well, definitely. And there's a big misconception, I think, that people think, well, there's here and then there's there, and that's it. But it's rather, it's in layers. I mean, we're on a physical plane, and when we pass away, we go to a next level of the plane. But when you get to that next level, you can see that there are levels up higher and higher that you can't get to. Certainly, if you're an evildoer, you're not getting out of that next plane. In fact, you might have to come back to this plane over and over again until you get to a point where your soul has grown enough to enjoy the higher levels. I know, you know, the Buddhist religion talks about, you know, going up the levels until you reach nirvana, and I think that's pretty spot on as far as what I've read.
I believe the Buddhists also say you die as you live.
Mm.
And, you know, if you live a good life, you'll die a good death and are passing into another sphere. But I truly feel that. My parents weren't Buddhists, but they lived that.
And yeah.
They taught that. And I think we all have to remember that. We're all one, number one, and that we're, you know, we depend on each other and we have to treat each other with certain kindness and understanding. But yes, I think that that passes on into your passing, into the into wherever you go, the universe.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point. What you said, that we're all one and we are all connected. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So yes, Virginia, there is afterlife justice. It's just not the way you thought about it. It's self-inflicted afterlife justice. All right, we maybe have time to discuss one more. I've been wondering if there have been any experiences where the soul of an unborn child comes through in a dream visitation, and what age would they show themselves as? I would say yes, people do report experiences of having visitations from unborn children, and as far as what age would they show, you know, normally we know that people in spirit appear younger than what they were, or at an age that they felt most comfortable about themselves. So I don't know how, you know, so, I mean, I've read accounts where an unborn child comes through as a 30-year-old, as what they would have been, you know. So, you know, that makes sense to me because, you know, a soul is a soul. A consciousness is consciousness. If it was an advanced fetus and, you know, they had a soul and they had consciousness, you know, why not? That makes sense to me.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I recall during a group reading, somebody had miscarried a child and was, you know, still so upset about it. And the medium brought forth the child saying, my only purpose was to be wanted and loved. And they fulfilled that. And so the pregnancy didn't last, but the soul of that unborn child was fulfilled.
All right. Well, I think that we have to wind it up, as much as I'd like to keep this party going. Let's read in honor of Claude Swanson, his global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to add that our loved ones truly are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
And good night, everybody. Good night, Marta. Good night, Tom. Good night, Melissa. Good night, John.
Good night, everyone.
Good night,
Moon.
Good night, Moon.